This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about special education. Schools, teachers, and students across the state were forced to quickly adapt when the pandemic hit to figure out how to make things work and keep students learning at home. But that's an even more complicated problem to solve in many ways for special education students, many of whom need tailored one-on-one help. We'll talk to our guests today about how Indiana schools have reacted and why some are worried they're not doing enough. If you have questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it in front of our panel this afternoon. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Before we get to our live panel, we're going to bring you a recent conversation I had with Kim Dodson, Executive Director of the ARC of Indiana. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So what does the ARC of Indiana do?
We are a statewide not-for-profit organization that advocates for the issues important to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And certainly education, special education is a large part of that.
And so you hear from families who reach out to you for guidance on issues they're having. Was there a big increase in those when the stay-at-home order started? I assume a lot of parents needed help navigating such an unprecedented situation.
Absolutely. You know, I think for the first week, everybody was hunkering down and really trying to figure out what this all meant. So that first week was kind of eerily quiet. But it did not take long for things to get on Facebook, for emails to come out, for phone calls to start, of families just trying to figure out what was best for their student, and also for schools to start reaching out about what can I do to make sure I'm doing things appropriately. So, yes, it did not take long at all for information to be requested.
So what were some of the common questions you've been getting from parents about how to deal with these new challenges during quarantine?
Probably the number one question we continued to get was, does the school still have to educate my child? And that was the easy yes. Of course they do. And then for so many families, there was, you know, I don't have access to a smart device. I don't have access to broadband or internet. I didn't get a hard textbook to bring home. How do I do all of this? And then we also have a lot of families who were working from home, but then were also now doing the e-learning with their child and just didn't have the flexibility in the hours in the day to do both and do them both well. And so they just really were struggling about how to make all of that work. And again, just wanted to really understand what the schools were still required to do with their student.
I would imagine being, and I'm not, so I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I would imagine being the parent of a special education student, you know your child, you know your child's needs, but is that different from knowing your child's special education needs, would you say? Is that a specialized skill that these teachers have and that really only they can do?
That's a very strong yes. I am a parent of a child who receives special education services, and I do know how my daughter learns, but I'm not able to teach her the same way that her teachers who are specialized in special education teach. And so it is extremely difficult, and it's really harder to do when you don't have somebody sitting right there with you. And again, this virtual environment is not always an easy access for every student.
Do you have any examples of schools that have done a great job adapting during the pandemic, especially for students in special ed?
There's a lot of schools, and I don't want to give the impression that most schools failed during this. I want to say instead that most schools thrived during this. I think a lot of schools stepped up to the plate and made sure that communication was continuing to be very, very strong between the students, the parents, and the schools. Jasper School Corporation is one that always comes to mind. They have a very strong special education director network up there, and they thrive on communication, and they think that you can never over communicate. And so they try really hard to make sure that there's a lot of communication going on back and forth between the parents and the schools.
Jasper, I mean, that is in a rural part of the state, and we've had a lot of conversations on this show about broadband internet access, and you just mentioned some of the issues around that. So it sounds to me like that's a good example of a school that has not only overcome that part of it, but also the special education aspect. Can you go into a little more detail on that?
Yeah, you know, again, I think it's all about communication, and again, realizing and knowing well your students. And knowing that, again, sometimes flexibility is going to be needed. And so knowing that even though, you know, this approach might be best, if that's not available, you pivot and you go to B or C. And I think, again, just communicating with the parents so that, one, the parents feel like they are being heard, they are being listened to, and the student is still being valued. And that's what I think that particular school corporation does so well. And I hear it from families, I hear it from teachers, and I hear it from their special ed directors. And I think it's just because the philosophy from the superintendent to the principals all the way down has just been always so strong and so person-centered focused on the students that this is where they really thrived and it made a difference.
Can you talk about the transition students in special education had to make when this quarantine started and they had to work from home? What was that like for them?
No, I think it's really hard. I mean, change is not easy for a lot of people. It's especially hard for students, for young kids. And it's really hard, again, for a lot of students who have disabilities where they are most comfortable in a very set routine. And if the routine gets interrupted, then you start seeing behaviors or you start seeing focus and attention issues. And so I think it was really hard. And, you know, you would like to say that at least they were going home and being with their parents who, again, know how to react to those behaviors, react when the focus and attention heightens. But again, when you have parents working from home, not understanding how to move forward with the lessons plans, not understanding how to really teach the materials, it's a recipe for disaster because tensions and frustrations are high for everybody. And so I think, again, it's just, it was really difficult. And I think some students thrived. I think some students really did not do well, and that's to no fault of their own or even to the schools.
We're on with Kim Dodson, Executive Director of the ARC of Indiana, and we're talking about how the pandemic has impacted special education in Indiana. This portion of the conversation today is pre-recorded, but we would love your thoughts for the live portion of the program, which is coming up very, very soon. You can get with us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it in front of our live panel, which is coming up again soon. Again, that's 866-476-3881. So, Kim, are you optimistic that schools will take those lessons of this forward, I guess? Do you get the sense that those conversations are happening or will happen around these very specific needs?
I am. I do think that schools very quickly came together and want to take the experiences they had during, you know, March through May and use it to make themselves better the next time this happens and even going into the next school year. What I am concerned about is whether or not they will be heard and listened to on up down the line. I want to make sure that they are communicating well with the State Board of Education, with our Superintendent of Public Instruction, with the Governor's Office, with legislators. Money is going to be tight this next session. We were already seeing a teacher shortage. And so I'm just hoping that communication is strong amongst all stakeholders, and all stakeholders want to learn from one another to make school a better place next year than what it was this year. So I am optimistic. But I am concerned that communication will break down and it will all come down to money. And we all know that money is going to be tight.
the pandemic has sparked a lot of conversation about working from home, being educated from home, and about this being sort of more of the norm going forward. Is what's going on right now sustainable for an area like special education, or do we need the people there among the students in the facility?
This is not the best learning environment for students receiving special education services. Some of them need people right there with them, helping them. Some of them really draw their energy from being with another live human being. You can't get that through smart devices, no matter how good the smart device is. So there are some students who truly do need those one-on-one services that are not available through remote. And again, we can't leave out the parents. Not every parent is able to stay at home and work and be with their child and assist them with their lessons plans and their learning. And so we have to make sure that we get back to school in some type of a new normal way. And I think that technology should be a part of that new normal so that this sudden switch is not so sudden, that people do become comfortable with learning through technology. But I don't think it should be the only method that we provide to our students, especially those students receiving special education services.
I want to focus in on a clarification that you made. You said some of them. It seems like special education is sort of it's a broad brush that a lot of students need specific needs that are very different from other students that are that require special education services. Do you think that there is that the pandemic has perhaps shone a light on the differences there? And are you satisfied with the way a lot of schools handle special education services?
Yeah. Well, one, I think every student learns differently, whether they have a diagnosed disability or not. And sure. So I think we are much more attuned to that now than what we ever were. And I think that's a very positive thing. I am concerned about going forward. I think schools are now much more aware of how they are teaching their students with disabilities and wanting to make sure that they have appropriate resources available to them. This has certainly made it hard for them. And so I think, again, that communication is going to happen, and we have to make sure that, all stakeholders are a part of that conversation going forward.
We've been talking with Kim Dotson, Executive Director of the ARC of Indiana, as we talk about special education needs and the pandemic this hour. And we are looking for your questions and comments for our live panel coming up next. You can get us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Kim Dotson, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for shedding light on this important issue. I appreciate it.
I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about how schools are working to accommodate special education students during the pandemic and how families are dealing with schools that aren't doing enough. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me live now are two guests, Daniel McNulty, State Director of the Patents Project. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Loud and clear. And Catherine Michael, Special Education Attorney. Catherine, did I get your last name right? I'm sorry.
You did. It is Catherine Michael, and I'm at Connell Michael Kerr.
All right. And Daniel, we'll start with you. Can you tell us what the Patents Project is?
Absolutely. My pleasure. And thanks for having me. So I'm the director of the Patents Project, and we are one of more than 10 projects in the Indiana Resource Network, which is a group of resource centers in the state of Indiana, made possible through the Indiana Department of Education Office of Special Education. And these resource centers offer targeted and comprehensive support to all of Indiana's public pre-K-12 schools at no cost to them. So, which is a really great service for our Indiana educators and learners, and is somewhat unique to Indiana. And so the Patents Project really is focused on improving literacy for all students, but especially students with disabilities, through assistive technology, accessible educational materials, and universal design for learning. So we've been doing this work for many years, and I really have to say that I think I have one of the best team of professionals, and quite proud of the services we've been providing through this pandemic and before, and that we'll provide after as well.
So how have Indiana's schools handled technology throughout all this?
Yeah, that's a really complicated question, actually, because it varies quite a bit from place to place, as I'm sure you're aware. It varies based on internet availability, but it also varies based on things like policies and the devices that schools have, and if they're one-to-one, and if there's different devices for different ages, for example. Sometimes devices aren't actually sent home with students with disabilities, which is tragic. And so we've come to realize some really great things that are happening around the state, and also some things that can definitely be improved that were brought to the forefront through the pandemic. And so one thing I've been saying is, you know, a lot of the things the Patents Project does is focused on accessibility and accessibility of educational materials and accessibility through assistive technology. And so we've been talking about these things for many years, right? And a lot of schools have kind of always said, we know this is important and we want to work on it, but it's not the priority right in this moment. And it just kind of gets put on the back burner sometimes. And right now, it not only is it on the front burner, it's the only burner. It's the only thing. And I kind of equate it to like a camping stove that you've had in the closet for a few years, and you pull it out and it's a little rusty. It's the only stove you got, but we got to use it. And so it's put these things in the forefront, which I think leads into some real opportunity for growth going forward and some things that hopefully will stick around as well.
And how are some of the issues you focus on different when you're looking at something like special education?
Yeah, it's the same in a lot of ways with all kids, but it's also different because there's some specialized instruction. And of course, specially designed instruction is what makes special education special. It's the above and beyond that we do as far as services and scaffolds and assistive tech and specialized formats of materials for students who need to receive things and interact with things and respond to things in slightly different ways. And so, you know, we've been getting questions like, you know, my child received a paper packet from school, but no communication with it or it's not an accessible format. So if that student's blind, for example, a paper packet is not accessible. And one other thing that has come to light is even if it might be accessible to that student, the parents and the families in a lot of ways have become the facilitators of instruction at home. And so if that parent or family doesn't is blind or doesn't read or doesn't read English, we have to make things accessible to them as well. So it's become specialized in the sense of providing things that are accessible to the students from a distance. And which is sometimes harder, sometimes easier than doing it in person, but also making sure that we're providing materials that are accessible to the families who are facilitating the instruction at home. I don't know if that answers your question, but
I think it's quite good enough. And Catherine, you work as a special education attorney. We hear about specialized attorneys a lot, but this seems especially niche, I guess. How many special education attorneys are there in Indiana?
There's probably 2 to 3 of us that do it full time. 2 of us, myself and an attorney, Tom Blessing, are the only ones who I think do it completely full time in Indiana.
Wow.
And I also practice in Texas and Michigan as well. So, you know, and there aren't many attorneys in those states either who do it. It really is a very specific practice.
So what are the kinds of cases that you usually get involved with?
For instance, we'll have a child who has Down syndrome, let's say, who's not getting speech therapy, occupational therapy, who's, you know, significantly behind where they should be. I will tell you, each year I do many, many cases involving dyslexic children who are in the high school years, who have never been evaluated for special education, who have failed the ISTEP every year, who haven't received any services for reading. And, you know, as to Daniel's point, there are many situations we have where parents don't even know that these services are available. My very first case involved a child with dyslexia who was in 12th grade. And he had other specific learning disabilities as well, who had never been found eligible, never tested by the school, and really never provided services. The sheer number of those we get in Indiana, I think, would be staggering to anyone on the outside. We also get a lot of restraint and seclusion cases, or cases involving children with autism who have been arrested at school or who are not being provided services. So, you know, I see sort of the messy end of all of this. I see many heroes out there who work in schools, but I also see the really messy end that I think a lot of people don't realize is there. And, you know, when you see it, it can be very, very disconcerting when you think about the literacy needs, the technology needs that individuals with special needs actually need when they get out in the world to survive and not end up in the criminal justice system.
Well, let's talk about work for you, I suppose. How have things changed for you and your work since the pandemic?
In some ways, it hasn't changed that much. I mean, schools still have an obligation to do it. And I think, earlier we were talking a little bit about some of the schools are really stepping up and they're doing a phenomenal job where they're really communicating with families. Other school districts really have thrown up their hands. And I think in some of those cases where you have, for instance, children who, you know, I'm going to come back to dyslexia because it's something I think probably most of the listeners understand. If you have a child with dyslexia who needs things to be read aloud or explained or to be at their instructional level versus their grade level, in areas where they're just providing classes online or they're sending packets home, when that child is at a second grade reading level and it's being presented at a seventh and eighth grade reading level, that's caused a lot of problems. So we've had a bunch of cases like that. The other changes we're seeing are, you know, speech therapy and occupational therapy can actually be provided online. And we're seeing situations where parents and students actually have the technology, but schools aren't doing that. And, you know, going back, we have some school districts who have done a great job doing it. So when we see those comparisons, it does make it hard. But those are the biggest changes.
Daniel. Oh, and actually, you know what, Catherine, I need to ask you this. Since you are one of, as you say, about three special education attorneys in Indiana, do you need help? Do we need more in Indiana?
We actually do. You know, that's the sad thing that I think people don't realize is that we have many, many attorneys who represent schools. And schools, you know, for all, you know, the good that they do, they're also, you have to remember, they're government entities. And we really need to have a voice for the special needs community and a voice for these kids who aren't getting services. And sometimes that voice, you know, these are administrative hearings when parents file actions. They're not damages related. I certainly think it's a field that needs to expand just so there's some level of enforcement. Because, you know, not to give you the long answer, but in Indiana, we have something called Article 7. And then federally, we have the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The state does not enforce these laws. The only enforcers are parents. They're like private attorney generals. So if I want you to think of the sheer number of students we have in Indiana, and then you think about the number of students who are in special education, approximately 100,000 or more. So you think about the fact that there's no enforcement of these laws other than parents doing it on their own. If there is a problem, it gives you an idea of the sheer volume of cases. And parents cannot really find counsel.
Today we're talking about how schools are working to accommodate special education students during the pandemic, and we are live with Catherine Michael, a special education attorney, as we've said, one of three in Indiana, and Daniel McNulty, state director of the Patents Project. And we welcome you to join the conversation. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. Leave a question or comment there, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. And we have one of those to go to now. We have a listener voicemail from Michael with a comment on this. Let's listen to that now.
Hello, my name is Michael, and I am a skills trainer and case manager in South Bend, Indiana. And I work with kids who have special needs in schools, particularly with managing behaviors. I think that one interesting note and challenge in this pandemic is that a lot of the families I work with, the parents do not know how to manage behaviors. And so losing their support systems has been really tough. In our county, we have switched to doing all online or phone-based services to help coach parents instead of just coaching the kids. And we have seen some pretty good success with that.
Thank you very much, Michael, for your comment, and we welcome you to do the same. Again, the voicemail line is 866-476-3881. Daniel, I'll get to you, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on what Michael had to say, but Catherine, we'll stick with you. How much does that resonate with you, what Michael said about parents needing this sort of training to figure out how to educate their children?
They actually do, and it is in both state and federal law. Schools are supposed to offer home training so that we can see programs implemented with fidelity. For instance, if you have a certain behavior program at school that you're using, like you give positive reinforcement when a child is responding to certain things, you want to see that at home as well. And so the district he's in is already doing a really phenomenal job integrating this with families, and that's very much what we need to be seeing statewide.
Daniel, what about you? How much disparity have you seen between schools in respect to how much they're providing students and parents right now? How wide of a spectrum are you seeing?
Yeah, I think Catherine had a really good point. That, you know, even during before the pandemic, there's a real, you know, most teachers are teachers because they want to see kids succeed and they want to see growth and they like to see those trend lines go up on those data graphs. And we know that happens at a much faster and deeper rate when we include families in that process. So I think there was a lot there's a lot of schools who were doing a really great job of that before the pandemic. And like I said before, with the pandemic and, you know, in place, and kids at home and teachers at home, it became essential for the schools that weren't doing it to figure it out. And I think there was a good comment that some I think it was from Kim Dodson, that some schools have kind of just thrown up their hands and said, we can't do it. And so I've heard comments like, you know, this isn't what I signed up for. I didn't go to school to be an online teacher. I went to school to be an in-person teacher. And so I think there is a wide disparity, a wide variety of what's happening with as far as including families. But I think the schools that are making contact and keeping regular communication, even if it's not earth-shattering stuff that's being trained on or shared on a daily basis, just that ongoing communication and checking in has, in my opinion and experience, proven really successful for both the families and students and schools. And I think it's the schools who have kind of said, thrown up their hands, I'll use that term again, and kind of said, I can't do this, I'm not sure how to use these tools. So one of the things that the Patents Project did was, I asked my staff to have open office hours in Zoom twice a day, every day of the week, Monday through Friday. And so those happen at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. every day, all throughout the pandemic, and they were just open for teachers and families and students to kind of come in and just ask questions, play with the Zoom platform, get comfortable with it. And so those were open kind of office hour type things. But we also did at least 14 trainings a week we offered. And those are on specific things like text-to-speech and speech-to-text and reading and writing for students with disabilities and instructional strategies without technology that can happen at home and behavioral strategies and those trainings were really, really taken advantage of. And we had the highest numbers over the last 8 weeks or so of attendees for online trainings than we've ever had. So I think that's a real plus and a real positive as far as schools trying to be involved and change the way they do things while they're doing it. And another thing I always say is school really never stops and gives teachers and educators and administrators the opportunity to just reflect on what they do and retool and kind of change their practice and throw the things out that don't work and try new things. It really never stops. School just kind of goes all the time. And so what this pandemic has forced is that forced opportunity to stop and reflect. And we have to throw out the things that aren't working because we just can't do some of them. and we have to be creative and find new ways of doing things. So I think there's a lot of pluses that have happened with regard to how schools have reacted.
Daniel, you just mentioned some resources that the Patents Project offers, and we heard about some from Catherine that have some federal backing. But let's make this list a little more comprehensive. What kinds of resources do you know of that parents around the state have, other resources other than the ones we've mentioned, to kind of help them navigate all this? In about a minute, we've got about a minute left in this segment.
Sure. Yeah, I'll go real quick. So one big one is InSource. So InSource is a parent group, which is part of that Indiana Resource Network that we're a part of. And they primarily work with families. We also have a page on our website, patentsproject.org, that's fully dedicated to resources for during the pandemic learning at home. And there's a lot of things that are directed toward teachers. There's also things there that are directed towards families and students. But of course, there's that huge overlap that's happening right now. And of course, all those resources are free, both from us and from InSource.
After the break, we will keep talking with our live panel about the current state of special education in Indiana. We are live with Daniel McNulty, State Director of the Patents Project, and Catherine Michael, a special education attorney here in Indiana. And we would love your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on special education in Indiana during the pandemic. We're joined again by Daniel McNulty, State Director of the Patents Project, and Catherine Michael, a special education attorney. And as always, you can send us your questions and comments for this live portion of our program. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or send us a short voicemail. Just need your first name and where you're calling from. Do that at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. And we'll go to one of those now. We have a listener voicemail from Diane about what this transition's been like as a speech pathologist in the school system. Let's listen.
Hi, my name's Diane, and I am a speech pathologist in Northwest Indiana in the school system. And I can say emphatically for speech and language children, especially those with additional needs like autism or attention deficit, it has been overwhelming for the families. They have all stepped up to the plate and done the very best they can. But from their perspective, especially when you have the children that need the routines, some of them have said the first thing to go is my services. And I have four schools. I work in two corporations. The paperwork for me has been astronomical, and I'm not saying I regret that. I've actually enjoyed the challenge, but I can say it is at a cost of my family life. I've worked pretty much 7 days a week until last week, and even though we were done almost 2 weeks ago, I am still doing my updates and sending home final summer activities for all of my students. So that's it. It has been overwhelming. I'm scared about what the future holds. We, again, are working forward to see how we're going to manage that, but it is a lot to manage.
Catherine, is Diane's a common tale right now?
It is a common tale, and I think that's where speech therapists and occupational therapists have really, really been struggling is their services, you know, even though speech therapy can be performed by Zoom or something along those lines. And that goes back into Daniel's even earlier comments on we have a system in place where we can actually train parents, right? When a parent is actually getting to watch the speech therapy that's provided, that can be extraordinarily helpful to them. And I know a lot of speech therapists are extremely frustrated right now with the fact that they are not only overwhelmed, that the technology is not in place for them to be doing these services or providing them to the students they know need them.
Daniel, let's go back to this conversation on disparities in education, and particularly special education with respect to today's conversation. How much of a difference does location seem to make? If you're looking at a rural district versus schools in bigger cities, for example, what's the difference there?
Yeah, sure. And I think from my perspective, more so than the location being rural versus more urban or suburban, I think is what schools were doing before the pandemic. And one of the biggest things that we've seen is, well, one of the things that we do is we have a Aiming for Achievement grant, and that's spelled AEM, which stands for Accessible Educational Materials. And through that grant, we work with school districts as a whole for an entire school year, and we invite them to come on for a second year and a third year if they'd like. But we work very intensively with them for that whole year on some specific things, and those specific things are policies and procedures and workflow, hiring process, and teacher evaluation process around accessibility of the instructional process for all kids. And so the schools, the districts that have worked with us in the past on that and had some things in place already, we're in a much better place. And that's true. And so we have them all over the place, all over the board with regard to urban versus rural. And so the ones who were prepared, sort of without knowing they were preparing for this, were in a much better place, more so. And that was a much bigger factor than where they were geographically. Of course, we've got some places who are way out in the country where there's just not the internet access that's the same, which is a huge issue. But I think more so is what they did beforehand. And to Diane's point about the speech therapy, I echo what Catherine said. That's definitely a common thread, a common theme that we hear as well, and that we feel as well too. You know, sometimes I don't stop working until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. My wife's a special ed coordinator, and she's the same way. And that's pretty much every day. And I worry a little bit about that overwhelm of educators and therapists.
Daniel, the Indiana Department of Education is using the language continuous learning to describe what schools should be doing right now or during the school year, instead of phrases like e-learning, distance learning, and virtual learning. I guess, what does continuous learning mean?
Yeah, and I hate to speak for the Indiana Department of Education, but I think I can address that. And so continuous learning just means that we continue the learning process and the evaluation process and the assessment process the best that we can. Whether that means through digital means with devices or through paper, pencil, and backpacks full of manipulatives, or however that needs to take place. And so I think the concept of e-learning was relative to things in the past that included like snow days and e-learning days with regard to that. So I think they wanted to differentiate a little bit from those days. And they also wanted to make it not necessarily indicative of being digital, of being with a device, because we definitely have places that don't have one-to-one devices for kids. And like we've talked about, we also definitely have places that don't have reliable high-speed internet.
Catherine, let's go into a little more of your realm as an attorney. What role do lawsuits have right now in issues around special education and issues specific students and families might have?
So we don't think of them in terms of lawsuits. They're basically administrative actions before the Department of Education. So when a parent disputes the services that are, or lack of services being provided to their child, they can file what's called an educational due process with the Indiana Department of Education, and they assign a hearing officer. And basically, the hearing officer will look at everything. If it actually goes through a hearing, they will witnesses can be presented by both sides, and then the hearing officer will make a decision as to whether that program is appropriate or what the child needs. So they're not typical lawsuits in terms of what we think of in damages. I do think those certainly play a role. I mean, in any society, we need to have a sort of a check and balance system, right? You always want to have due process cases because you want parents to be able to have a voice. And I can certainly tell you, you know, the sheer volume of children we see who are not receiving any services is concerning enough that we need to keep these systems in place. And so I think certainly when we have school districts who have basically thrown up their hands, and other school districts that are going above and beyond, school districts that aren't providing things, there needs to be some check and balance in the system so a hearing officer can say, you're going to have to provide compensatory services or additional services to make up for what was not provided to this child. Or you need to be doing some reading remediation by Zoom or something along those lines. That really is going to be essential following this time.
We're talking about special education and the pandemic today on All In, and we will take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or we've gotten a number of voicemails this hour at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. We have about 10 minutes left in the program, and we'll go to one of those voicemails now. This is from Dee in Indianapolis with a question about partnerships in the state. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Dee. And I'm calling from Indianapolis. Would you kindly ask your guests to comment on any collaboration that they've done with Indiana Disability Rights, who also has attorneys on staff that deal with special education and other disability issues for children? Thank you.
Daniel, it seems like a good one for you. How do you feel about what Dee has to say?
Well, I think collaboration has been huge in many ways, and we haven't done anything really directly with Indiana Disability Rights Group. We've collaborated intensively with all of the other IRNs, the Indiana Resource Network centers, to put together a guide and policies and suggestions and resources that's on the Indiana Department of Education website. And some of it is specific to content areas, academic content areas. Other parts of it are specific to procedures that are still required as far as IEPs and the legal aspects of still fulfilling the services of an IEP. And so we've done a lot of collaboration in that way. We've also done a lot more collaborating, I think, with parents. We've had parents show up to things like our office hours. And just ask questions and really sort of get involved in a way that they just weren't before, because like we've talked about, the necessity of being that facilitator of instruction for your own child at home while trying to be trained from a distance from a therapist or a teacher is a whole new process and incredibly overwhelming. And we've also got teachers at home with their own kids who may or may not have disabilities. Trying to be the facilitator of their own child's instruction while also training other families. So I do think collaboration is really important, and I think we've seen a lot of groups come together. We've also come together nationally with groups like CAST, the Center for Applied Special Technologies, and done some joint webinars, and we also hosted a Twitter chat every Tuesday evening, and we've seen people come to the Twitter chat from all over the United States just to kind of share ideas and regroup together and share resources. Definitely collaboration, I think, has been a huge part of the positive things that have happened.
Catherine, before I get to my next question for you, any follow-up on Dee's question?
Yeah, we do a lot of work with Indiana Disability Legal Services, and they actually have attorneys who do process on behalf of parents too, and so they are really a tremendous asset in the community.
And in preparing for this show, in this conversation that we're having today, Catherine, we've seen Article 7 come up. Can you explain what Article 7 is?
Yeah, Article 7 is our state version of the federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Mm. And basically that the acronym for that, when parents hear about the word IDEA, that is the federal law. Article 7 is the state law. And Article 7 really puts together the framework for what families are entitled to and what schools are supposed to do in terms of special education. There is a guide online at the Indiana Department of Education's website that actually can take parents through it. It's called Navigating the Course. But any parent who has a child in special education really should look through that law, look through the guide. It will help give them a much better understanding of what services are available to them.
And pulling back from that a little bit, do you have a sense for how different Indiana is in how special education is treated and how issues around it are resolved compared to other states?
Yes, I work in three states. I'm licensed in three states, and then I work in a sort of a limited capacity in other states through local council. And I can certainly tell you, Indiana sort of is in the middle of the road to me. On our cases on the East Coast, we see hearing officers in states be very, very proactive. But again, there's a lot more attorneys in those states. There's a lot more enforcement of those laws. And Indiana, our Indiana Department of Education has actually done a very, very good job. We do have good hearing officers here. I think our biggest problem is just the lack of enforcement with some school districts who just don't understand the law themselves and are not advised as to the law because they're not, encountering actions. So that, in my mind, I think Indiana still has a long way to go. But compared to states, especially in the South, when we look at Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, even Ohio in some respects, we are certainly ahead of the crowd.
I want to make sure we get to this voicemail from Bonnie, a parent in Indianapolis. Let's hear that now.
Hi, my name is Bonnie. I am calling from Indianapolis, Indiana, in Washington Township. My son attends Nora Elementary School and has an IEP in place because he is diagnosed with autism. Something that parents can ask for and something that we just recently learned we could ask for is training involving assistive technology. The school district will train parents on how to use the technology that has been used in schools to make lessons more accessible. So if that's something that a parent needs, they should call a case conference with the team and ask for it. That's within our rights under Article 7 in the state of Indiana.
Daniel, this goes back to a lot of the conversation we've had already about parents just not knowing what is available to them. What's, I guess, the biggest obstacle to getting schools on board using the technology that they should be using, especially in situations like this? Is it just money?
Sometimes it's money, but most of the time it's not. I think it's fear. And when I say fear, that encompasses a lot of things. And so we hear a lot of things like, I didn't go to school for that, or, we hear things like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and I don't know how to use this stuff as well as my students do. And really what those things boil down to is I'm scared. I'm scared to try something new that I don't really know how it works yet. I really work a lot to try to get teachers and therapists to just jump in and try something and really empower their students by learning it with them. And most of the tools that we're talking about for the largest number of students are tools that are really kind of mainstream. So if we take like an iPhone or an iPad, for example, or a Chromebook, there's an awful lot of built-in accessibility features to those devices that we can do really quick training and kind of say, here's what it looks like. And now let's go in and make these settings a little more specific to that particular student, for example. And so when we get questions, we always ask, what's the goal? What's the objective we're trying to get to for this student? And then what seems to be the barriers? And we talk about what the task is that's trying to be accomplished, what the environment is that we're trying to do it in. And the very last thing we talk about are tools. And so that's one of my worries as well. We're seeing a lot of tool dumps, I call them, just lists and lists of resources of tools, which I think adds to the overwhelm that some of those teachers feel and is not productive, I think, because we really have to look at the student and the environment and the task and then the tools last. And by doing that, we apply the right tools to the right situations. And there may be several different tools for the same student for different environments or for different tasks. And so I think that the caller was absolutely right, that training is available and that schools can call us anytime. They can join any of the trainings that we have scheduled already, but they can also request trainings and we can do our best to put those in place. It's just a matter of getting them on the calendar.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. I want to thank you for your time today, Daniel McNulty, State Director of the Patents Project. Thanks so much, Daniel.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Catherine Michael, Special Education Attorney, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks.
If you would like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can get it wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow's the Friday Pitch-In. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.